Welcome back to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for software engineering leaders. I'm your host, Aaron Syme. In today's episode, I'm speaking with Jen Derry, a leadership coach and entrepreneur who we've spoken with in the past on the Scaling Tech Podcast, and she has a lot of great insights to share, so I'm really pleased to have her back again. Today, we'll speak primarily about career paths for managers, but we'll also cover a few other topics and questions from my own management team. If you have additional questions for Jen after listening to this episode, just drop them in the comments on our YouTube stream for this episode or contact us on LinkedIn and we'll make sure Jen sees them and we'll cover them in a future episode. As always, please also like and follow the Scaling Tech Podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, LinkedIn, or anywhere else you're enjoying this episode. Really appreciate your support and feedback. All right, let's get to my interview with Jen Derry.
Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Through expert interviews, we help you navigate the challenges of leading, hiring, growing, and nurturing your tech team to deliver the value your customers demand. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally.
Jen Derry is a highly sought-after leadership coach, entrepreneur, brain tumor survivor, mom, podcast host, writer, and founder of Plucky, where she coaches CEOs, entrepreneurs, and leaders at every level to create healthy work dynamics and a better work life for all humans. Jen has empowered professionals at over 200 companies, including Google, Facebook, Slack, Code for America, The New York Times, and many more. She has shared her expertise with the Wall Street Journal and as guest on multiple podcasts, including Harvard Business Review's Women at Work. Jen lives in Arlington, Virginia, with her husband and young sons. She finished writing her first book about the brain tumor, which she plans to release in the coming year. Welcome back to the Scaling Tech Podcast, Jen.
I'm so happy to be here.
It's great to have you back. We spoke last about a year ago on episode 21. Where we talked about mentoring first-time managers in that conversation. Today, we're going to talk about career paths for managers. So I want to start with a question. If you think there is, what is the ideal career path for managers?
I'm glad you're asking this because I think all of our parents assume that's just the way. Like if you're onwards and upwards, then we all one day will take on that leadership responsibility. But I would like to reclaim that idea. No shame to our parents. And I guess if I think about it as ideal, I think an ideal career path for any role would be something you're interested in, something you find fulfillment from. And then specific to managers, I guess I will say that you don't get too much responsibility too soon. So ideally, you are given, you know, I could imagine like a volume knob. It's like first you're in charge of something and then you're in charge of a little more and a little more versus a very common story, which was so-and-so went out sick or so-and-so got poached and now I'm in charge of the company. And that's just maybe not ideal.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I like the observation of how sort of the view of career paths has changed generationally. You know, I had a family member who was very excited that I have a corner office, and they thought that that meant that a business I'd been running for 10 years was now a legitimate real business. And I thought, well, you know, you realize like, I'm the entrepreneur here. I'm paying for this corner office. No one awarded this to me. I gave myself this title. And in fact, that lease was one of the worst business decisions I've made. So I'm happy to be getting rid of it. So yeah, perceptions have changed, right?
Smart.
And certainly when you come from the sort of the, you know, if you come from a background of sort of large company climbing the ladder versus small company entrepreneurial, there's lots of different paths for us, right? I mean, as you said, people can become managers by accident, by design, with a variety of levels of experience and training. How would you break down the different types of candidates for a managerial position?
Yeah, you sent this question over and I was reflecting on it a little bit as if I was going to be interviewing someone to be a manager. What would the different
Perfect.
Candidates look like? And I think there's three categories that come to mind. The first would be the diversity of the manager, meaning how many times have they been a manager? Mm-hmm. And so kind of like how many different jobs have they had? And explicitly, I would be listening for different companies in an ideal sense, because then you will have had several flavors at least to compare them to, right? The second one I would say would be depth of experience. So how many months or years have you been a manager? The answer is not wrong, no matter what it is, but it does give me a sense of how many blocks you've been around, so to speak. And the third one that came to mind was like the type of experience. So have you managed contractors? Have you managed offshore? Did you manage three teams of seven? Did you manage one team of one, right? That sort of type of experience is going to, again, tell me some stories about the shape of how you have understood the role of manager before. And it's going to, if I'm the hiring manager, it's going to help me understand what ideally would be easier for you when you come in, and in what ways am I going to support you a little bit more?
Oh, that's interesting. I like that. Now, do you see as there being any sort of ideal type of background? Do you have a preference over any of those, or is it, or a combination of those?
Well, you know, just like with everything, a lot of it depends on what role I'm hiring for. So if I'm hiring for something, I don't want this to sound insulting, but like a little bland, right? It's like, okay, I just need a, you know, line manager, engineering manager for, let's just say maintenance work. Okay. So I do not need a rising ambition rocket ship. Because it's going to be, I mean, obviously I should vet that out with them, right? But like, it's probably going to hit a ceiling at some point that's going to come back and I'm going to need to recalculate. So a lot depends on, is this role going to be like someone who's ideal manager or ideally in the org chart, is their manager out on maternity leave? So are they going to need to manage on their own for 8 months? That's also relevant to the picture for me. And are they a self-starter in that way? Have they had experience kind of leading with a little bit more responsibility? So I honestly think there is no right shape, but the most important question is, does it match the sort of hole that they're going to be filling on my team?
Yeah, that makes sense. So if you're that candidate looking for that managerial role, if you weren't selected for it, it doesn't necessarily mean you're a bad manager or you're on the wrong career path. You may have not been the right person for that specific role is all that that could mean, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What about in highly specialized teams like technical teams? I work with a lot of software teams, so that's, you know, the natural way that I tend to think about this. What do you see as any extra challenges in very specialized teams if you're an outsider coming in as a manager?
My instinct is that you don't have to always be fluent in everything you're going to be working on. So you're suggesting a very technical team, which is a great example. But you should have some reasonable understanding of the arena you're stepping into. So if all of your developers are going to be, you know, well-versed in one language and you don't necessarily know that, that I would say that doesn't take you out of the game, but, you know, you might speak to that in the interview to say, just to be upfront about this, I'm a very technical person. I'm not super, you know, fluent in Go, but I'm a great learner and I'm very willing to sort of pick up the ball and run with that. Here's another example of a time in my career when I stepped into a role and I didn't know all the skills. I really enjoy learning and blah, blah, blah. Maybe they won't take you, but if they have even the inclination to take you, you've reassured them that you are aware of that slight awkwardness. And like that in an echo of what you just said to the previous question, it's just so important to see what they're looking for before you apply. Mm-hmm. Don't psych yourself out. That's also a problem, right? But be able to pitch yourself as a match for what they're looking for. So look for things, if they want someone experienced, be able to bulk up that part of the, you know, cover letter or initial introduction in those interviews with recruiters, or like be smart about it, right? Like do not just submit yourself as one peg in the whole system. Make sure that you look like you're addressing the need and you're not just blanketing the whole job market.
Yeah, that makes sense. So if you're an outsider interviewing for that role, then would you suggest kind of turning the question on your interviewer, you know, early on if you're the candidate and say, well, you know, I have a lot of range of experience. I'd love to know a little bit more about what you're looking for in this role, or so I can focus on it in my answers, or something like that.
Yeah, I love when people are subversive like that, because I just want to remind everyone that you are also interviewing that sure. company. So they, you know, and this, so much of this depends on the job market and how difficult it is to get a job right now and not. But nonetheless, you do not want to get a job that's going to ring you out in 3 months and you're going to be back on the market right. again, right? So you want to, you're also vetting that. So to show up at the recruiting interview, answer the questions, and then they, of course, will say, do you have any questions for me? Then you might say, yes. So why don't you tell me a little bit about why this role is vacant? Because maybe the last 7 people left because they're burned out. Helpful information. Right. You know, so why is the role vacant? What are you specifically looking for? Is there, you know, a really big priority that you'd like to fill for this? I'd like to think about that when I reflect on my answers if I make it to the next round. You know, things like that. And it also, again, just shows that you're sort of an active participant in those conversations. You're not just showing up to attend the meeting, but you're really you know, collaborating of
yeah,
sorts.
Yeah. And it's all in how you frame that question when you're asking it, right? You know, you don't want to come in with sort of a haughty attitude of, you know, you should be so lucky as to hire me, therefore I want to know sure. this, right? But if it's more open and exploratory, then even in a, you know, I would say even in a tight job market, you know, you're really helping them to understand the right things about you to help you get that role, you know, if you're not seeing a lot of other yeah. options out there. But ideally, you know, you are truly choosing among from, you know, a few options of what's going to be the best opportunity for you as an individual.
Yeah. And I would always prefer to work with someone who I think, how do I want to say this? Like, they're not desperate.
Sure.
So if they're asking some clarification questions, that tells me that they are making a self-aware choice, that they do also believe this is the right role for them. And instead of just smiling and nodding the whole way, and then I give them the job, and later I find out that there was, you know, some sort of skill gap or just concern with it, I would way rather know that up front. I think it starts the relationship out with trust. And again, I said collaboration a minute ago, and I think that's just a huge part of it. So if you get the job, that's the other thing we never think about, right? So like, let's say you get the job. Now what? Like, you know, it's not like they forget who that person was who just interviewed. So in some ways, it's almost day one of the job is your first conversation with someone
yeah,
over there.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about the difference in becoming a manager for a team that you used to work in. So, you know, promoted internally. Versus coming into an existing team as that new manager from an outside position. So, you know, if I was working on the team, say I was an individual contributor on that team, and now I've been promoted into a management role over it, I have a lot of insider information, which is a pro and a con, perhaps, versus that outside candidate. You know, how does that vary for you? How does that change kind of the challenges that you would face as that manager?
Yeah, definitely. This comes up all the time because I think a lot of folks who I teach a new manager training called So Now You're a Manager. It tends to be people who are within their first couple years of management. And a huge majority of them have come from internal. So they used to be an IC, individual contributor, let's say. And now, for whatever reason, a hole opened up and someone said, you're it. So then, you know, with literally no training, then they come to me. And I think underneath both career paths, so coming external or sort of growing through the ranks, it's all questions of identity and trust. So if you are currently internal and you're an IC and you have peers, and now you are promoted to be in charge of those peers, it's almost like you have to re-meet them because you now have power and responsibility, and that can be super awkward. And also maybe you were all friends and you all went out for drinks or, you know, talked crap about the boss or, you know, I mean, a lot of things that colleagues can do, which is completely fine. My guidance to someone going through the ranks like that would be to, again, almost like call the awkward. So in the first rounds of one-on-ones, to be like, so here's the deal. Obviously, this is going to feel a little funky for a while. But I want you to know that, like, I really like working with you and I'm excited to work with you, but you might feel that I change a little bit in terms of what I can talk about, what I can't talk about. because I really want to do a bang up job with this new role, and I'm gonna probably need a minute to figure out that identity. Ideally, then you have set a precedent so that when they notice that you have become the corporate man or whatever crap they're going to talk about you, right, that you have acknowledged that and you're not trying to like inauthentically show up, you know, for the job the next day. They're also on that side of the or on that version of the career path, you also have deep trust with people to start with. So that is a huge benefit to you. Hopefully they, you know, are in agreement that you deserved that mm-hmm. promotion. But if we go the other way and you are completely unknown to the company and you come in at a managerial level, you have no trust with anybody, but you don't have the identity problem as right. much because they've never met you before. So you come in with authority because you're the manager. So that one's going to be an easier win. Trust building then becomes your main exercise. And you know, you've probably talked with other people or even thought about this, but the idea of doing a listening mm-hmm. tour, I think, is really important. So let's say you come in as an outside manager, you have five people on your team. I mean, literally the first thing you should do is meet with all those people and say, tell me a little bit about yourself. What is working for you at work? What are some challenges that you're having or things you're not super happy with? Is there anything I should know about how to work better with you or how to work well with you? Right? Things right. like that. At a certain point, you won't be able to have that simplicity of conversation, but this is like the first time I'm meeting you, so tell me your stuff, yeah. you know. And that is your day one of building that trust. And then, you know, being able to respond to that or remember that about people, I think, becomes your work.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard people say things like, you know, with regards to a listening tour, when you're that new manager, don't make any major decisions for 30 sure. days or, you know, some sort of, you know, time frame so that you've got time to do that research, build a little bit of trust, show that, you know, yeah. you're not there to just be a chaos machine. You're there to bring in good ideas, but you need to understand the lay of the land first before you can figure out what is a good idea, right? You know, whatever was your
yes.
favorite thing in your previous job is not automatically a good idea in this situation, right?
Yeah, like don't be Elon Musk. That should be the title.
That's
of this
good.
Episode.
That's good advice for a lot of situations. Absolutely, I agree. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So okay, so maybe that's a good segue here. If to a question I wanted to ask you about, if you don't have any management experience, you know, mm-hmm. maybe following the example of some people like Elon Musk is probably not a great idea. So what is a good way to get on that career path, to get some of that experience, learn some of those things that you need to know?
Yeah, it's, you know, again, I kind of think this question comes back to that notion of identity a little bit. If people are talking in a boardroom about, who should be our next manager? Who could we promote? You want to be on their mind. You want to be an idea that comes to them. So now we step back and we say, how do you get on people's minds? Well, often they're going to almost like look through, I know the neuroscience here, but in my observation, they're going to almost like look through their mind of who has demonstrated some kind of leadership before. So you want people to think of you as a leader or a potential leader. Again, now we step back. How does that show up? Well, it could be that you are leading something else, like you are a volunteer in your kid's school, and you talk about that sometimes at work. You are leading in your community of faith. You're active in your civic association, right? I mean, if you need a volunteer leadership role, trust me, there are 4 billion opportunities out yeah. there. Everyone seems to be asking me about it all the time. So you could take them all. But the notion that you are seen as a leader because you already have flexed those muscles and learned a bit of that exterior to work can be, you know, huge. And then also that you are just a person that people trust and that you're responsible and that you're good with people. Those would be good attributes too that could come to mind for them and say, you know who's pretty good with people and who is always on point with deadlines? So-and-so. Right. Why don't we see how they're doing? So you want reasons for them to associate your presence and identity with somebody that could be a leader. And ideally that would be, you know, by your activity and the way you show up at work.
Yeah, I like that. And yeah, it's a really good reminder about outside civic groups, business groups too. You know, I think in
yeah.
early in my career when I was I had opportunities to sort of show my ambition and desire to grow in within my work, but also, did take advantage of things like local technology council committees, always looking for people, chamber of commerce, you know, more general volunteer opportunities. And those are all things you can put on your resume, right? It's a lot like, you know, I recently went through as a parent, that phase of life where kids are applying for college and seeing all the things that they had to put on their college applications. It's somewhat similar to that. You know, you don't have to be a varsity athlete, but there's plenty of business and civic groups that you can join to show that experience for your current job as well as the future job too, right? Because sometimes people, I think, in your current job, maybe you want to be on the management path, but they sort of have you, you know, shoehorned into a particular box that they see you as, and they don't realize that about you, right?
That's right. And, you know, if there's a question in your mind, elevate it in your next one-on-one with your manager to just say, hey, I'm not sure what's on the horizon out here, but I just wanted to tell you that I have a few friends who've been promoted into management. It sounds like something I might like to try. So do you know, are there any opportunities coming up? And if so, what could I do as an IC to demonstrate that I would be ready and interested and willing to, you know, take that next step? Another attribute that comes to mind as you were talking is, I think I want to phrase this as that you are a helpfully neutral person. And by that, I do not mean that you cannot have opinions on things, obviously. But I think we can all kind of sense when someone is wielding power in a room in a way that doesn't feel great. So for example, if I come up and I, you know, I am not technical, I'm not an engineer, but if I say something like, I mean, we're clearly not going to go with this technology choice because those people are morons, you know, maybe I think that. But if I'm going to be put in a leadership role, that's very toxic. Right. You don't want a leader who's going to, you know, crap on other people's, you know, ideas or things that they might actually not believe the same thing. So if you're moving towards leadership and you are someone very opinionated, try to find the right channel for that. And in broader meetings with a greater audience, if you sound like a person who's inflexible and unwilling to hear other people's opinions, then you're not giving signals that you would be a good leader and that people would trust working with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the sort of more toxic leadership traits like you were describing there, those are the sorts of things that will get you notoriety on social media, get you attention that way. But that's a whole different measurement scale than in the workplace, right? In the workplace, people are looking for people really with a combination of skills too. So I think that's another thing. I don't know if you have kind of thoughts on different ways to lean into the different types of leadership styles that a person needs, you know, but sometimes as a leader, you need to be very collaborative and seeking opinions from everyone, being a little bit more like committee driven, decision by committee driven. And then there are other situations where you need to be more assertive as a leader and say, you know, okay, we've talked about this enough. Someone has to make the choice. Mm-hmm. I'm the leader. This is the path we're going with, you know, that sort of thing. And those are very different skills. And most of us are more naturally suited to one over the other. And so, you know, maybe through some leadership training, like you offer, you know, helping you can identify maybe what, you know, what I'm naturally good at, what I need to work on. I want to take a moment to tell you about our sponsor, WebRTC Ventures. At WebRTC Ventures, our teams are experts in building live video into your web or mobile applications. We've literally built hundreds of them. We have over a decade of experience using both open source and commercial media servers in a wide range of industries, including telehealth, ed tech, broadcasting, and more. We also publish a lot of helpful tips and industry interviews on our website and our YouTube channel. So be sure to check out webrtc.ventures and we can help you build, scale, and deploy your video solution.
Yes, and I think that asking yourself the question, what does the company need from me right now? What does the team need from me right now? Puts you in a mindset where you realize that some version of your leadership is responsive to the climate that you're in. So when you were giving those examples, I could imagine if like everything is gangbusters and you have $1 billion and you could R&D your face off, then you might need to be like innovative leader. Right. I have ideas. And if you just had a riff and you laid off half the company, that might not be the kind of leader they need. You might need to be calm and reassuring and calculated and data-driven. A listening tour again. Don't go on vacation as soon as you do the layoffs. That's a thing I was hearing about yesterday. But you know that. So in that sense, the type of leader that you are, I mean, really does come out of where are you and what's the environment and how's the economy and, you know, how's everybody's morale and those sorts of things. And it doesn't mean that you can't have some things that are definitely personally your style, but the ability to read a room is a huge skill that leaders should use. I also want to throw out there the idea that don't be too nice as a leader. If you're too nice and you can never tell someone that that's probably not a good idea, or I'm sorry you screwed up, or you know, whatever, something. If you can't say that, then you are creating a massively passive aggressive culture where they're going to figure out that you don't think that was the right thing. They're going to get feedback in their performance review and it tracks back to you. But you were like super sweet in person. It creates people worrying about like, are people really what they say? Do I need to watch my back? And that toxicity is so hard to overcome, especially if you don't swap out the person who facilitated that. So in this example, I'm talking about highest level CEO. How often are you getting rid of them, right? So especially if you're at those high levels, just be really aware. Sometimes you have to say hard things and be brave enough to do it. And if you aren't, call a coach or, you know, a mentor to help you through it.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. And yeah, learning how to say those things that need to be said, but with your own emotion dialed back in that conversation, right? Of just, you know, this is a fact of the situation. You know, I'm presenting you with this because I want you to improve and, you know, I want you to understand what we need from you, that sort of thing. So.
Yeah. If I can say one other thing on that, in this class I teach, we talk about how to fire someone. And everyone gets very quiet and nervous as I demonstrate these things. And I always say, when you go into that room, you want to keep it very simple. So you want to say, all right, we're here today because today is going to be your last day at the company. You know, we appreciate the contributions you've made, but it probably is no surprise. We've been having a lot of conversations about performance. And so today is the last day. So we have some forms for you to sign and then et cetera, right? You say whatever else you need to say. But I was like, do not go have a slideshow of memories. This is not the time of like, this is a hard day. But you were amazing at that karaoke party. Like, no. You keep it simple. And I'm leaving aside all the legal implications of all that, right? But this is not about you, the manager. This is a life moment for that person. So your emotions are totally irrelevant and you are actually burdening the room if you come and you say, this is really hard for me to say, but I mean, stop. It's not your, like, you need to be a bigger person here because that person is going to remember this probably for the rest of their lives. And if you can keep it simple, it will be the least traumatic, you know, of all the options because it's hard, but also sometimes it's necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. And undoubtedly, the hardest days in my career as a manager and a leader have always been those sorts of days. So I could definitely appreciate that. I saw someone resharing, sort of trashing a post of manager posting a selfie saying, I just fired my first employee today and talking about their experience as a manager, you know, what it was like and thinking, wow, this is, I hope that wasn't real. You know, I hope that was a fake post, you know, it would be a prime example of somebody, not understanding it. As you said, this is not about you as the manager this day. You know, this is about the person that has to be let go and, you know, doing that in as calm and empathetic a way as possible. So.
Yeah. And you are allowed to go home and be like, holy F, what a freaking morning, you know, and you are allowed to vent about that. And in fact, you need to, right? You need those trusted channels. But yeah, let's not post selfies on social media about it. And if you do, then we all know who not
right, right, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. all right. Well, I have a few questions from my own management team that I wanted to share with you. So make sure that this is not just about my own learnings, although I always learn something speaking with you, Jen. I want to share a few of their questions for you. So my colleague Raphael wants to know, what are some innovative approaches to conducting one-on-ones that you've seen make a significant impact on team performance and morale?
Yeah. So first of all, I think that he's cool already because he's asking that question. So you're already winning, Raphael. My instinct is that really, if there's anything going on and you need to reset or improve something, so, you know, he's mentioning performance, also morale, listen. So go to a one-on-one and listen to what's going on. And in coaching, we might use the phrase mirroring. Mm-hmm. So I mirror back to you. So let's say Aaron comes in, he says what's going on. And I say, okay, great. Well, for today, if it's okay, I would like to just ask some more questions about that and listen. I might take some notes, but just so you know, I'm not here to fix that today. I want to hear more about what's going on. Or what should I hear about that we haven't talked about lately? And then you just let them talk. And then along the way, you say, okay, let me just mirror something back to you. It sounds like ABC is not going well because client X has been, whatever, unresponsive. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right? Do I have that right? And you mirror back and you get that confirmation. And you're sort of daisy chaining this conversation along so that at the end, you can then take a minute and reflect and say, thank you for sharing all of this with me. I don't always have that perspective because I have a different role at the organization. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to take that away and think about it. And then in our next one-on-one, I'd like to come to you with some recommendations for how we move that forward. What I have just demonstrated is that I heard you, you matter, and I'm going to help you. And that is very relevant when it comes to morale, obviously, but also to team performance, because sometimes people are like, why the hell am I doing this, man? You know, they don't listen to me. And if you're having any shade of that, then it's going to be very efficient for you to just have a really strong cycle of one-on-ones, you know, next week or whenever it is. And do that listening and reflect back.
I like that. And my favorite part of that response you just gave is the idea of coming back with an answer later. Because I think, you know, for me, I'm probably naturally of the problem solver personality type. I want to jump right to a solution. So I know when I go into a one-on-one, you know, I have to remind myself, I may have agenda items, but you know, we need to kind of start with, hey, what's on your mind? How can I help you? Right. It's again, it's not about me as the manager. It's about the other person that I'm talking with. Making sure that I leave space for them to drive that agenda. But what I like about that suggestion, of sort of, let me think on that and come back to you in our next meeting is it shows an extra level of interest, right? It's not just that I heard what you said. Yeah. I like, you know, confirming it back to them, mirroring it back, as you said, but then showing that you also recognize the gravity of this situation. And this isn't just something that, you know, in 10 seconds I can, you know, spout off a story from 10 years ago in my career and somehow solve your problem, right? I'm going to give this some serious thought.
Yes.
So I like that.
And it's very important then to do it.
So don't just say it, but do it.
When you
That's
come
right.
back, you reflect back. And, you know, I think now that we're sort of pulling this apart, I would say it might be good to bookend it. So for example, at the beginning of that week with one-on-ones, to just say, hey, y'all, you can blame this podcast. I was listening to a podcast and they suggested doing a 1 week thing where we just really check in deeply about how work is going for you and, you know, whatever. Okay, great. So then you have that conversation with people. By the end of that week, you're going to have data. Mm-hmm. So you will be able to hear, are there patterns? Did everybody else agree that client X is unresponsive? Interesting. Did they not? What's going on for this person? So it's almost like you really benefit from waiting to respond because more information will be coming to illuminate deeper understanding of it. So I actually think that is an added benefit to pausing, especially if you're going to do that, you know, 1 week serious listen. You'll be smarter.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I have another question here from Alberto. Alberta wants to know, what strategies have you found most effective for pairing mentors and mentees, especially in a remote work environment?
So I have a tiny anecdote here. My dad is a PhD in chemistry, and he was a high school teacher for the end of his career, about 15 years. And he was here this past weekend because my son graduated fifth grade. And my son is very interested in math and sometimes science in those ways. And he had been asking us questions about like hydrogen and oxygen. And I'm like, I don't know, man, ask Pop-Pop. So my dad came and they were at the kitchen counter for about 10 minutes. And my dad was like showing him how to like balance chemistry equations. I don't remember it. It was not my jam in high school, but it was very sweet. And at the end, my dad turned to me and he said, I mean, I feel like I'd still be teaching if everybody was like this. And that to me was a great suggestion of a very solid mentor-mentee moment where the mentee showed up, my son, really eager to learn. And it was something he had been thinking about. And he really, you know, he didn't just say like, okay, thanks, Pop-Pop. Like my dad would say something, he would ask a question. It was this really authentic conversation. You could tell my son really wanted to hear more about it. And my dad then, I mean, he's not talked about bonding chemicals for, you know, a couple of years now since he retired. And so you could see that he was really activating his brain and wanted to respond to his grandson, you know. So to transition that to the workplace, I think what you want to look for is someone who's eager to learn and someone who's eager to coach. And it's not like you get a little more money if you mentor, which could be nice, but ideally you want somebody who's really curious and invested. And so to that end, I think maybe you might have success if you ask, let's just say you're opening a mentorship program up and you ask, what are the top three things you'd like mentorship on? What are the top three things you feel you could mentor on? And then do a sort of matchmaking with those things and even be explicit and transparent and say, you were aligned because two of the things you were looking for are two of the things they're very interested in coaching on. So, you know, then you sort of set them up for success knowing that those concepts are going to be really fun and kind of motivating.
Perfect. I love it. And maybe that's also a path for the aspiring manager to step back to our topic for today, right? That, you know, that's a way for them to show that, you know, I want to be a manager. And part of being a manager is kind of being a mentor to others, right? So, you know, let me mentor my fellow software developers or whoever to show that, you know, I have those communication and leadership skills.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, for the manager themselves, I have a question from Mariana, who asks, what's the best way for a manager to gather feedback from their direct reports, so about themselves?
Mariana, this is a good question. The basics is ask them, right? Like that's ask them and then listen right. to the answer and maybe mirror back and go away for 1 week and come back. Like we kind of just covered that shape of it. But there are so many circumstances where there are reasons that you don't necessarily think asking them will get you the most valid answers. And that could be that the trust is thin, or that they're intimidated by you, or that you have heard from other people's stuff, but they've never told it directly to you. So in those ways, you might need a slightly more nuanced way to get feedback. And even a small group could be good. So let's say the team is six people and you say, I'm going to meet with you three today and you three tomorrow. And you bring a topic and you say, I just wanted all of us to kind of brainstorm a little bit on, again, poor client X. I'm like, keep bringing them up. They're unresponsive. They're the worst. They don't pay their bills, you know, whatever. I just wanted like all of us to kind of reflect a little bit on, what do you think we should do about client X from your perspectives? And in that way, you're sort of accessing a different group dynamic in the room. It's not just you and that person, but there's like a few more people there. And so I think that could be a way to also get at feedback if you're not sure of the validity and the clarity for a lot of different reasons that would come directly from them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I, as a manager myself, I would certainly be worried that, you know, if I were mirroring back to them, I would be saying things like, oh, so you say I'm awesome because your annual review is next month,
exactly.
right? and, yeah. But I guess in that group setting, you know, to beat up on client X a little bit more, you know, perhaps the way I can get feedback as a manager is to say something like, look, I know client X has been complicated. We've all talked about that. How can I better support you in that? You know, are there things that I'm doing that are helpful or not helpful? You know, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And again, not that this needs to be a commercial all the time, but I have these decks of cards that are specifically for managers to use. And this is so that you are not always asking the question of, do you have any feedback for me?
Right.
It's like, I don't know. That's a weird question. People kind of can answer it, but kind of not. So to ask something like, if you had keys to the kingdom and you could make me do one thing about Client X, what would it be? Or what is something we're not talking about that we should be talking about with regard to Client X? Or, you know, so anyway, I think that the type of questions you're asking really matter in terms of how accessible that feedback is going to be. And if you're just sort of reading from the classic manager 101 script, it might not be as real as you want it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to come back to something you said earlier and make sure that we talk about this idea that someone may go into management and then want to go back to an individual contributor role, to an IC role, after having tried management, or I don't know, maybe just as a pause, even.
Sure.
Talk a little bit more about that scenario and the, you know, maybe the negative connotations around it.
Well, this is a great sort of throwback to how we started this conversation, which is that you get corner offices and management roles, and your entire community and, you know, your parents are so proud of you.
Right.
So rut-row, what if you're like, actually, I'm good. I'm going to just step back, right? What is the implication? And so I think that we are emerging into a period where that is not horrific for people to imagine. At least in the tech industry, I'm seeing that folks are more open to that not being like a slide backwards, but rather an intentional choice. And the thing I really think about management is that it is going to be a season of a lot of emotional labor, hard decisions. You might take it home with you a little bit more often than you would some technical challenges. So make sure that this is the season that's right for that. If you just had twin babies, actually, the babies don't, I mean, you're tired, but they're not complicated in the same way. If you have like two high schoolers who are problematic and you need to use a lot of that management decision-making emotional fatigue on them, then maybe you need a little break at work. And maybe you need to show up and do your work and not be responsible for the emotional well-being of a whole other group of people. So I am always an advocate for asking what muscles are not completely bruised from home and other areas of your life, and try not to make that what you need to get paid for and performance reviewed for crying out loud. So the ability to go and say to your manager, look, you know, I've really loved growing into management and I appreciated it, and I think I need a break. And especially for, you know, in our field, there are a lot of folks that identify as introverts. And so this is going to be a depleting exercise for them every day, is, you know, spending time in these one-on-ones that we're talking about, which is just like, so like, you know, one-on-ones for everyone. Like you and I are like, oh, just go talk to them and mirror back. And that's really draining.
Right, right. It's not always that easy.
No, go fire people. Ha ha, you'll be fine. You know, like that's extremely draining and emotionally wearing for people. So, you know, again, sort of some intention about how can I show up in my best self? And right now, if that's not a person-based responsibility role, then that's okay. And, you know, I think you can be very self-aware and advocate for that. Now, I can't guarantee that at the same company, they're going to be okay with that. Hopefully you can have that transparent conversation with your manager and they're responsive. But if not, you can start to look for a separate role at a different company. And I know a lot of people who have done that and then leave that door open, you know, to say, you know, I need a break from the management stuff. It was amazing. I had great performance reviews. It was good, but it really burned me out. So I actually would like to go back to, you know, senior engineer, staff engineer, whatever your level was, for my next role, but I'm not closing the door on potentially eventually at your company managing again.
Yeah. Sometimes you may have to change companies. I also have a close friend who's taken a long sabbatical away from management, and he's fortunate to be able to be in a position, you know, financially that he can do that. But I'm very curious to see as that time period is coming to a close now, what is he, you know, right. is he going to go back into a management role or more of an individual contributor role? Or, you know, I've also had a couple of friends who have been in technology team management who are kind of also saying, you know, I think I'm ready to just have a totally different career change. And they're trying to figure that out too.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all go yes. through different stages of life, and that may be appropriate. There's not, you know, anything wrong with
yeah.
that. So.
Yeah. I don't know if it's that I'm getting a little bit older, or that my company is getting a little bit older, or that tech is getting a little bit older, but I am now starting to have conversations with people about retirement.
Right.
And they're not ready to do it right now, but like if that was 10 years from now, or even 15 years from now for some people, then it starts to say, well, how many jobs do I want to have in the mm-hmm. meantime? And if I want two jobs in the next 10 years, then should I be leaving now?
Yeah.
You know, and this kind of rough calculation. And I mean, let's have a podcast in 5 years and talk about strategies for that. Because like I said, it's just starting to get on my
yeah.
radar. But it's fascinating to
yeah,
think
what
about.
What will my second act be, or sort of my,
right.
so to speak, you know, if final professional, you know, stage in my career to be, not to make it sound too morbid there, but yeah,
no,
think
definitely.
About, you know, I've got a 5-10 years, whatever horizon, you know, how do I make the most of that for myself, and for my family, and for, you know, and therefore if I'm doing that, presumably I'm also doing the most for the people around me, you know, the people I'm working with.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, you shared earlier that you have a child looking at college or preparing for that. I don't want to presume. Maybe your kid is, you know, not necessarily going to sail away into the future perfectly. But theoretically, that presence around your home is not there anymore,
right.
which opens up maybe a different amount of energy spend in a direction that has been fatiguing
sure.
up until now, right? And I do think, like, we bought this house a few months ago, and we are surrounded on three sides by retired people. And so we look insane. We're like running to the car, going to soccer, going to PTA meeting, running back to the car, forgetting the groceries, you know. And all these guys are just like gardening. They're like walking around with wine in the evening, looking at their flowers.
Right.
And we're like, what are you doing? So it's funny how the pace of that life just is going to be really different. And so to anticipate that and to start to put some, you know, almost balls in play
right.
for how to make that come about is really
yeah.
thoughtful.
Yeah, exactly. So to sort of bring it back to the idea of career paths, you know, there's the how do you get on the career path to be a manager, but that's certainly not the end goal, right? You're going to become that manager. And then you've got to think about, okay, what do I do now that I'm a manager?
Yeah.
And it's not this, you know, continuous upward slope to the corner office, so to speak. It's, you know, it can and should be perhaps a lot more complicated than that, and not just a straight line. So.
Yep. I think it's worth asking after you would get that promotion, where do I want to mm-hmm. go next? And you don't need to get a promotion every year. I'm going to slow that down right away for everybody. Maybe it's senior manager, but are you getting leadership experience because you wanted to go out on your own
right.
one day? Are you getting leadership experience at a smaller agency because you wanted to work in big tech one day? Like, where are you headed? And that's going to help cultivate some of the pathing that happens next once you're, you know, in the management ranks, let's say. And so I think continuing to sort of self-inquire there and figure out where would the next place be, even if it's in 3 years, oh, I want to be, you know, promoted to director or whatever. Okay, cool. Then what are you doing today to make those skill gaps disappear and to get more experience?
Yeah, hopefully you've got some goal for a management career path beyond just a presumably higher pay, right? That can be a nice perk,
yes.
but there's something else that you're trying to achieve. Having that sort of rough destination in mind so that you know what sorts of management roles you might want to be, how long you might want to be in them, that sort of thing. I agree completely.
Yeah.
I think that's super important. So,
yeah.
Jen, I know earlier you said you didn't want to turn this into a commercial, but we're approaching the end of our time here, unfortunately. So I'm going to give you the commercial slot now. Where can our viewers learn more about your work, as well as get those one-on-one and mentoring cards that you mentioned earlier?
Oh, thank you. It's always so strange to be a person who has a business and go on podcasts. You're like, I genuinely want to talk about this stuff, but then I feel like I sound like I'm trying to sell it. Anyway, I would love for people to buy things from me. So yeah, the best thing for people to do is to subscribe to the newsletter. You just go to beplucky.com. That's beplucky.com. And there's a link in the top for newsletter. And I send one newsletter a month. It's usually funny. It's some stories about what I see in the workplaces. And then I, you know, let people know about upcoming trainings and whatnot. So the newsletter is the best bet. The second thing I will say is if you're interested in a new manager training, I have the next one coming up in October this year. So that's October 2024. And at least at this recording in the early summer, we have some tickets left. So people should go check that out. That's also on the website. And then ultimately Instagram and LinkedIn. I have a presence for Plucky on both.
All right. Excellent. Beplucky.com. And thank you again so much for joining me on the Scaling Tech Podcast. Great to speak with you again, Jen.
Thank you for having me.
On behalf of the thousands of developers we've placed with our clients, I want to briefly tell you about our sponsor, Agility Feed. Agility Feed has been building nearshore agile teams for U.S. companies since 2010. We were an early pioneer in doing this sort of developer staffing. Our team can help you recruit talented software engineers and technical teams in Latin America. We'll handle all aspects of recruiting, contracting, and payments for you so you can focus on delivering great software. To learn more, check us out at agilityfeat.com. That's agilityfeat.com.